author of the week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.
Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, M. Craigie.
Thank you.
You are a teacher and writer and author of Chocolate Cake with Hitler, Henry VIII, The Exploding King, and now What Was Never Said.
Yes, and I also this year co-wrote a book called Hitler's Last Day, which came out strangely just a month before What Was Never Said.
Ah, fantastic. Talk to me about, I mainly want to get right into What Was Never Said, because it is very topical.
Yes.
It's a young adult novel about female genital mutilation.
Well, it is very topical, and I think it has become very topical because lots of young people who come from communities which are affected by female genital mutilation, or FGM, have been campaigning about it and have been campaigning to stop the practice. And a few years ago, actually in 2012, when I was researching a completely different book, which I didn't end up writing, and I met some young people in Bristol, and they were aged kind of 14 to 18, girls and boys from all sorts of different backgrounds, but the majority of them were of Somali origin. Mm-hmm. And they had formed an organization called Integrate Bristol, and they were campaigning against FGM, and they were really inspiring young people who were very, very clear in their minds that there was a great deal they valued about their cultural traditions. There was a great deal they valued about the kind of Western world that they found themselves living in, but on both sides there were things that they weren't happy with, and one of those was FGM.
Yeah. And in the book, tells the story of Zara's family, and she had two sisters, Rama, her older sister, and Sam, her younger sister.
Yes, well, the story starts when Zara is 15. The family are living in Bristol, having come to the UK as refugees from the Somali Civil War, and Zara has come to England as a young child. Her younger sister, Sam, has been born in England, but the older sister, Rama, died when she was subjected to FGM back in Somalia. And Zara, the kind of heroine of the story, has memories of that terrible incident. She's always kind of assumed that practice is in the past. But the story begins on a day when three women visit a family home in Bristol, and she recognizes them. She remembers them from the cutting of her sister, and she realizes that the risk is still there.
Yes. I really enjoyed the book, and it's aimed at young adults, but I really enjoyed the book because it very much read like a thriller, because your hoping Zara is going to sort of outrun the cutters. But also there are scenes and memories from Somalia, and it seems like this family is really trying to hold their lives together, through the war, through father chewing cat, through all these different things and all these different traditions. And it's like, what do you take with you and what do you not take with you, you know, to the future? And traditions do change all the time. People say, oh, well, it's traditional. It's like, yeah, well, we used to drown witches, you know, that was traditional. But, yeah. It perhaps is time to change these traditions, you know. And I thought your discussion around that was actually, it was very sensitive and, you know, it doesn't just demonize people, but it's like, you know, well, they're in betwixt and between too. You know, the parents are getting pressure from generations above them.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And you know, going back generations, practices like this, which we now know to be so medically harmful and so psychologically harmful.
Brutal.
Yeah, people carried those out in the past, believing that they were doing the best thing. I think that what Zara goes through, that sort of experience of really being jolted by trauma into looking at, okay, what do I want to take forward and what do I want to reject, what do I want to leave in the past, is something actually that all young people go through to, thankfully, usually to a much lesser extent, but it's the same process when you're growing up of working out, you know, what are the things that really matter to me and what are the things that, you know, I'm going to want to keep in my adulthood and what am I going to move away from?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we all do that. And like, you look at your parents' lives and you're like, well, you know, I'm going to follow in the footsteps or I'm going to make a very different choice. And, you know, my life is going to be very different.
Absolutely.
And I think also with generations moving so quickly now as well, those choices, you know, look very different. And when you come from one culture that is and tradition that is that has for many years been unchanged, to a world of so much change, and is, you know, and is just values, everything is so different. Probably the pull to hang on to that, those traditions, is even stronger.
Well, I'm sure it can be, and you're right, we live in a world of in the West of such rapid change, indeed in most of the world, increasingly, and we're all kind of racing really to keep up, aren't we? And that means we're questioning things, I think.
Yes.
We're having to question things a lot.
Radio Gorgeous, the sexist station where you'll only hear the female voice.
Well, you said a little bit about how you got involved with writing this book and how that came to you. But
kind of any individual that I met, it's, you know, it's completely fictional, but I talked to a lot of young people and tried to understand you know, the experience of being a refugee and the experience of moving from one culture to another culture, and also it's that experience of recognizing something in your community that you really, really didn't agree with.
And I think these young people that you spoke with and then emblematically in the novel, they're really brave, because I mean, especially for girls to be speaking up, you know, I mean, they were, you know, in the book, and I think this probably would happen, you know, the mosque got involved. And that's a very powerful, you know, conforming not community, but that's a lot of people, you know, putting pressure on you. And they're very, very brave to speak out in this way.
You're right. It's very, very brave to speak out. And this young generation, and why, you know, FGM's been in the papers so much and we've heard so much about it, really is about a young generation having the courage to take on something which older generations really believed in. I think the mosque point is an important one because a lot of people, both Muslims and non-Muslims, have had an assumption that FGM was a practice condoned by Islam, and it actually isn't. It's a practice that exists in many Muslim countries, but it exists in non-Muslim communities in those countries too, and it actually goes back to the pharaohs, to ancient Egypt, so way before Islam. And you know, there are no Muslim teachings that support it. So I think it's an important.
It's a good distinction
to make that clear. Yeah.
Yes, because things have a tendency to get conflated.
Yeah, and I was very aware that I was writing about there were main characters in the book coming from a community that can often not be well represented in the press, and FGM is obviously a massive problem, but it's a massive problem in lots of different communities and in many parts of the world.
Radio Gorgeous, online, on your phone, or on your tablet. Listen anywhere, anytime.
Talk to me about less topical, but always a perennial, a hearty perennial. Hitler.
I'm quite surprised to find myself having written two books sort of about Hitler. And the first one, Chocolate Cake with Hitler, is also a young adult novel. And that came about because I came across the story of the children of Joseph Goebbels, and the six children were taken into Hitler's bunker at the very end of the war. And I had never known that. I'd pictured Hitler's bunker. I'd heard of that, obviously, but I hadn't realised that there were children in there. And I wanted to kind of tell that story and sort of imagine that from their point of view. So that novel tells the story sort of the very end of the Second World War and life in the bunker from the point of view of 12-year-old Helga Goebbels. And so that book came out in 2010, and after it came out, I did, as one does, I did a lot of talks and a lot of events, particularly in schools, about the book, and I found myself, talking about this terrible time in history again and again, and I got to a point where I just thought, I don't want to go, I know I've done this, I don't want to go there, I can't kind of go on showing slides of the terrible pictures and so on. And then, rather to my surprise, I've been editing a couple of books by this guy, Jonathan Mayo, and he'd written two absolutely fantastic books, one about the death of JFK and one about D-Day, which had this very simple format of just a short period of time, 24 hours, and going through kind of in chronological order what is happening to the different characters at that moment. So, what is Kennedy doing? What is Mrs. Kennedy doing? What is Lee Harvey Oswald doing at 6:10 in the morning, or, half an hour later? And it was just very, very compelling. And then it struck me that the day Hitler died would be a really interesting day to do, because all around the world, people didn't know. It wasn't like the kind of normally the end of a war is, everyone knows this is the end of the war, but this is an effective end of the war in Europe, and there are people, we looked at stories of across the whole world, kamikaze pilots in Japan, people like Audrey Hepburn hiding in a doing that day, what was Truman doing, and all over Germany and in the bunker, you know, just going through that short period of time, and it's called Hitler's last day minute by minute, and I found it fascinating to research and actually really fun working, collaborating with someone on a book, which was something I hadn't ever done before.
Do you think your focus on young adult novels, which I have to say read very satisfyingly as a 48-year-old, so they're not exclusive, you know, in that way, but does that come from your teaching background?
I think it comes from my parenting background, to be honest. Right this minute, we live near Glastonbury Festival, and I've got a house full of teenagers in early 20s, with all their wellies and tents, and I've got four children who are now aged between 14 and 24. So for the last kind of however many years, I've been surrounded by teenagers, and I actually think probably in the future I'll write for adults. I just think I've got teenage voices in my life, and you know, I'm thinking about teenage issues a lot. But I have to say, it was such a delight to research, you know, by having lots of conversations with young people. And also, it's been really lovely. The book has had some very nice reviews written by really amazing young people and, you know, really good young writers. And, yeah, it is really nice being involved with that age group.
Yeah, and it does occur to me, I don't know, but I was just wondering, you know, that there's a lot of fantasy targeted for this age group.
Yes.
But there's not, you know, just regular novels. You know, they're either, you know, it's either younger or older.
I think fantasy is hugely in fashion at the moment. Mm-hmm. And that's not my thing at all. But you're absolutely right. I just judged a teenager's short story competition, and I'd done the same thing 5 years ago. And 5 years ago, all the stories were about vampires, and then no longer about vampires. So that's, you know, things are shifting, but fantasy's a big thing now.
Yeah. And so what's next for you?
Well, I'm researching a book about the First World War, and I've got lots of sort of family diaries and photograph albums and stuff which I'm going through, which is really interesting. But also mulling, shall we say, another novel, and I think that will be an adult novel.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for talking to Radio Gorgeous, Emma.
Oh, such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Get in contact with us, contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com, and to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox. Who can think of anything better, darling?
Doing so much damage, but you don't want to get involved. Because you look so small, you need some shelter. You're just running around and I'm held to scare to. And I leaned on your fears, now you can lean on me. And that's more than love, that's the way it should be. Now I can't change the way you feel, but I could put my arms around you. That's just part of the deal. That's the way I feel. I'll put my arms around you. Stand in front of you and take the force of the blow. Protection. Stand in front of you. I'll take the force of the blow. Protection.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production, produced and presented by Donna Freed, edited by Bree Forer.